Welcome to a Joy podcast from LGBTQIA+ community radio station, Joy 94.9. For more information and tons of other podcasts, head to joy.org.au.
To Chicks Talking Footy. I'm Rachel, your host for tonight, and joining me is Beck and Moddy. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Hello.
Hello, Rachel. Lovely to be here.
Lovely to be here on this February night. So on tonight's show, we've got a big show tonight, as we always do every week. We will catch up on the footy news of the week. We'll have a look at round four and also look ahead to round five, which is the Indigenous round. We'll be speaking to Adelaide Ford, Danielle Ponta, and we will also be playing an interview from Tanya Hosh, social activist, 2021 South Australian of the Year and General Manager of Inclusion and Social Policy at the AFL. So, ladies, footing
that is a packed show, right, Shay?
It is a very packed show, so let's get straight into it. Footy news, footy news, footy news. I think we should start by talking about the round ahead, which is round five and the Indigenous round, which is a very exciting initiative of the AFLW, looking to celebrate and to honour and to look at the legacy and representation of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in football. What are your thoughts? Are you excited for the round ahead?
Great, Rach. Remember you and I spoke to Nicole Livingston at the Pride game, and she was telling us about how this was the first year they'd had the Pride round. It was the first year they were going to have the Indigenous round, and they're having a country round, I think she said. And I just think that's great because the Indigenous round, as we know, has been such a powerful thing in the men's game. And there's so many wonderful Indigenous players playing in the women's game. I think it's really great to see that celebration in that game as well.
And I think also Danielle's we'll hear from shortly, but she said that it was great that it was something that was to start conversations, you know, around outside and inside football, but also within the club space and that sort of stuff. And I think that's it's a great point to start with, isn't it? To start the chat.
Well, that's right. Look, we've come a long way with racism, but we know, you know, Eddie Betts, there was incidents last year with him, you know, it's not an issue that's gone away. And I think, like you say, the more opportunities we can give people to talk about it, the better.
And what I think as a society and a community, we're starting to be active in this space. I think the recent resignation of Eddie Maguire from Collingwood demonstrates that we will not stand or not accept racist behaviour within the media or within the sport, and I think that's really positive moving forward too.
It's great. And I don't know if you two have seen some of the Guernseys that the teams have bought out. They all look amazing, but they all have these great stories behind them of who's designed them and what's behind the design. And I think that's a really good visual part of this round as well.
When we spoke to Danielle Ponta, she'll talk about her engagement with that process and what the Adelaide Guernsey means from her perspective. But I had a look at quite a few of them that are being released over the course of a few days. And some of them are great. Geelong's looks amazing. That looks fantastic. I really like that one. What about you guys?
What I like about the whole concept of the Indigenous jumpers is, and, you know, I guess it began in the men's, is that people are involved in it. You know, it's not just, they didn't just get someone off-site to design it and say, this is what you'll be wearing. You know, a club member or, you know, a player or something like that is involved in design, even if it's just a discussion around it to start with, which I think, but that just is cohesive. It brings everyone together. I think it's really important.
And it's some ownership for the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander players and people in sport, that it's not, you know, something that they're being told this is what you want to wear. It's that active involvement and ownership from the community as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I totally agree, Beck. That's a really good point. I think it's vital in this space. So I am very much looking forward to seeing, is it the intention, would we think, of all the clubs to release their jumpers over the next few days?
I think that's right. I think they're all having one, as I understand. A lot of them are on the club's Instagram pages and websites if you want to have a look at them as well, with the stories behind them.
And there's awesome. Also the umpires are going to wear the Sir Doug Nicholls round designed umpire uniforms. So that was like from the men's round last year. The umpires are wearing them in the AFLW round, and it represents both Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. Nicole Livingston, who you mentioned before, you know, had a launch of it with a bunch of players, I think Tuesday. And she said, Aboriginal and or Torres Strait Islander women have played a significant role in the development of our sport for many years, so we're delighted that we're able to recognise the contribution to our game in this first dedicated round. And I like that she said women in a broader sense, not just players. I think
is what
she was alluding to there. So it's good. Good times.
Yeah, I agree. It's a really exciting round, and I'm looking forward to it. And everybody loves football, so it's a really good, it can be a very good conduit to look at social justice issues like discrimination and inclusion and diversity. So it's very exciting. Moving forward with regards to news of the week, I know, Beck, you sent a interesting, I think, I'm not quite sure, I don't really understand technology, a tweet.
A tweet. It was a tweet I saw of an issue that was raised on another radio station. Not that you'd be listening to it, you'd be listening to Joy. So this is on the back of Maddie Pressbarkis being reported last week and potentially suspended. And given she's, I think, already, again this year, the best player in the competition, the question was, if you were starting the Brownlow Medal or AFLW League Best and Fairest from scratch, would you keep the fairest element, or do you want to award it to the best player? I think you need to have the fairest element. And the reason I said that is you look at someone like Andrew Gaff, fabulous player, but for him to, let's say, won the Brownlow in a year where he, you know, effectively punched someone in the face, to me is not what you want as a look in the sport. What do you two think?
Totally agree. Where's the line? I do not think you can get rid of the fairness.
How do you make the line, though? Because Tony Liberatore, I mean, you know, historically, Tony Liberatore won, who was a little sniper. You know, Dipper won, Greg Williams won. These are all players that historically were not particularly fair.
Actually, I'm going to argue against myself now, because the other thing is that there's players who maybe are suspended for one game for something that was a bit light to get a suspension for, and then they might be ineligible for the Brownlow I don't know what I think now. I'm confused.
They had their opportunity to appeal the master review panel. If they truly believe that it's not something they should be suspended for in collaboration with their club, then they should fight it and they should be prepared to risk the increased penalty. I think the fairness part has to stay. I think it's important that it's all round, that it's holistic. You're right, Monty. There have been some players in the past who aren't well known for their clean playing, but they're rewarded for, I guess, a year of good behaviour. Lack of a better expression.
Did you see the tackle that Maddie Pressbarkis on Sarah Hosking?
Yes, I did.
No,
it's pretty strong. I mean, I was at the game, and at one point I was right behind the goals, and it is incredible to see and hear the game that close, that they go so hard. And Maddie Pressbarkis is the best footballer, as we know. And the reason she's the best footballer is because she is so skilled, one, but she goes hard and she's strong. And she you know, she constantly goes in like that. And but she, you know, to look at the vision, it looked awful, didn't it?
It did. It looked very brutal. I think she does possibly deserve a week, as obviously as an expert in the field. I'll just put my two cents in there. So, but I wouldn't be surprised if she does get suspended.
Well, Carlton,
I think it should make her ineligible.
Well, Carlton have appealed because she. So this is, you know, for transparency, this is a pre-recorded show. So by the time we go to air, everyone will know.
Yes, everybody will know the outcome.
But at the moment, she can accept a one-match plea sanction with an early plea. But Carlton have appealed that, which will be heard at 5:30 on Wednesday. So everyone will know.
Interesting. I no longer trust my own opinion. Okay. that bodes well for the rest of the show.
That's the caveat for the rest of the show.
That's
right. Before we look ahead or look and discuss AFL round 4 and review all the game, I would just like to just quickly mention that Libby Birch and also Brooke Patterson, who is the head of women's ACL research at La Trobe University, are currently engaging in a research study with regards to how to help prevent injuries in women's community football. They're currently looking to recruit or to find people who'd be willing to share, I assume, their stories, under 16s, under 19 and senior women's teams. If you are interested, obviously you can look at all the relevant social media that exists out there. But you can also go to prep to play, to being the numeral, at latrobe.edu.au. It's Chicks Talking Footy. You are here tonight with myself, Rachel, and Beck and Motti, and we are talking all things footy, in particular the AFLW. Woohoo! So, round 4. Let's start off with the first match of the round, St Kilda versus Geelong. Wow, Geelong. Come on, get it together. Ladies, thoughts?
I reckon this was probably their best performance of the year so far.
But it's not a great performance, Beck.
Is anyone surprised that they have not been great?
No. And I think this is an issue with a lot of the expansion clubs, and I actually discussed it with Breeza and Fina last radio show last week about expanding and the impact it can have if we expand too quickly in this space, particularly looking ahead for clubs like Hawthorn and Essendon, who are hoping to get licences in the next couple of years. And let's look at the issue, I think, that's in the AFL as well, looking at the 18 clubs and how quickly they expanded as well. So I don't think it's particular to women's football, but I think it is an interesting consideration.
But then St Kilda have been pretty good. So they're one, they're an example of... But North is sort of the GWS, really, aren't they? They got a stack of great players. But they're
just not meeting their expectation, which we will talk about later, but I totally agree.
Well, North, we'll talk about North when we get to them. St Kilda Geelong. Well, I mean, I always love an exciting player. So, of course, I love, Georgia Patrikios. Tilly Lucas-Rodd, I'm thrilled how she's gone at St Kilda because she was cut loose by Carlton whenever it was, not last year, the year before.
The year before, yeah.
Yeah, and then so St Kilda picked her up, and I imagine, you know, she had already been cut loose, so it wasn't a transfer or anything. And she has played like a gun ever since.
I agree. It's given her a new lease on life, I think, the new club.
Yeah, exactly.
It has. I think what's impressive is obviously St Kilda's inside 50s far outweighed Geelong's. I think, you know, there was 13-3 inside 50s just in one term alone. They were able to convert the goals. Ree Watt, who finished with 16 disposals, 13 hit out for 5 clearances, 2 contested marks. I have to admit, I'm familiar with her from St Kilda, but she played an amazing game. So there's obviously a significant amount of talent within the St Kilda club, which is really exciting. Good on them. I think it's great.
Ree was at Carlton. She Mm. She had been at Carlton prior to last year and went across.
Oh, so she played with Brooke Lachlan.
No, mate. Brooke Lachlan did not play at Carlton.
And with Noble, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Rachel.
And everybody's friend Kate McCarthy's had a concussion, which is not great.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, that is not good. So I hope she's okay. Carlton Richmond, hey?
Yes. Poor Richmond, although they played not too bad.
I went to this.
I'm sure Breeza was excited.
What was it like? Well, someone said to me at the start, who's going to win? It's like, well, Carlton, from Obvs. The point, mm. because Richmond are useless. That's the kind of tone I was giving. Well, Richmond went bang, bang, bang. 3-0, 18 to Carlton, mm. nothing. I was standing there going, oh. God, and I call myself a footy follower. So it actually was a really good game. It was tough, and I mentioned Matty Prasparkas being as strong as always. Darcy Vesio, brilliant. Just always yeah. there. You could just see her circling, and she just knows where to go. And there's just an energy around her. Georgia G wasn't listed in the five best. She did some sensational things. She's a really yeah. very solid player these days. But it was a really, really good game. I think Katie Brennan still hasn't reached the heights she should have, I don't think. But Mon Conti had 750 touches and was great for Richmond.
I was about to ask who else was good for Richmond. I think she also got 2 goals. So yeah. she's quite amazing. And Jess and Sarah Hosking also went head-to-head on during that game, Carlton versus Richmond. Did you notice any rivalry, Moddy, when you were there?
No,
at the game?
I didn't. But they did go head-to-head on their social medias.
I was going to say they definitely did some good social media during the week. I was really glad to see Darcy Vesio have a good game because I think she really needed that and that might improve her confidence, I think.
So a bit of a pick-me-up for the season ahead because she hasn't quite reached her potential in this year's season either.
She was great. I saw a really cute thing at the start of the game, two little kids, like really little, two-year-old and under, two little boys in Carlton jerseys with their jumper, their names on the back. And I was like, oh, who are they? Whatever. And I started talking to the grandpa and it was Karen Harrington's nephews. And Karen is the co-captain of Carlton. And they were calling out. So in the warm-up, Auntie Kers, Auntie Kers. And then she came over and she's given them a big hug. They're giving her a big hug. She's giving them a kiss. And, you know, it was just adorable. And the mum was there as well, Karen's mum. And I said, do you get scared watching? And she goes, oh, yes, I really do. You don't get used to it. It's really hard, mm-hmm. but I'm really proud of her, but it was interesting.
Oh, it would be hard for any mm. parent of any professional sports mm. person to watch. So I remember watching the Olympics and thinking I just couldn't. I mean, apart from the fact I also don't want to wake up at 3 a.m. to take a child to swimming lessons. I just couldn't. It'd be too much. Anyway, moving along, Fremantle Gold Coast. Gold Coast. Kick the goal.
Oh, dear. Oh, yeah. Dear.
Gold Coast. But Fremantle, gosh, I mean, they have extended their run to, 11 wins, straight wins? They've got to be a contender for the premiership, surely.
Definitely.
Well, they've been great. I mean, when I watched them play the Crows last week, and the Crows are a decent team, you know, I think the point I'm trying to make unarticulately is it's not just that they're beating easy beats. Like, they're a real good team.
They really are.
They are great.
Their percentage is 293.
Yes, yeah, you know,
so they've had 4 wins. So 16 points percentage 293. Collingwood are second on the ladder. They've also had 4 wins, and their percentage is 187. So they're well above.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm not very good at maths, but even I know that is
that's a lot.
Quite exceptional compared to the other teams in the league.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And they are really exciting. And their back line was able to keep them scoreless for a significant period of time. I think they've got an amazing number of really talented players, Kira Bowers being one of them, are, you know, good on them. Great. Go Fremantle.
She's a star, Kiara Bowers. Total star.
Yes, definitely.
And who's your mates, North Melbourne?
North Melbourne, Collingwood. So I predicted, gosh, I really do have a bad luck, and I apologise, North Melbourne. I apologise to Port Adelaide. I predicted North Melbourne to win the premiership. And how wrong may I have been? I mean, obviously it's a bit early. We're only around four, but this is a very disappointing score against Collingwood.
Rachel, I think you're being a bit harsh to judge, because I think,
you think
if we'd asked this 2 weeks ago, I think North Melbourne still would have been the premiership favourites. I was really surprised when I saw that scoreline. I didn't see the game because I didn't think Collingwood was that good, to be honest. But some of their players, I mean, Bree Davey is playing out of her skin, 31 possessions. Chloe Malloy, amazing. They really, like, they're a team that should play well, and I think they're starting to play to their potential.
Chloe Malloy is an example of, as you put in, you know, with Patrikios and Prasparkas and a bunch of she's an example of someone who didn't miss, you know, any footy. So she's always played footy, and you can really see their skill level is completely different.
Well, interestingly, they had the same number of scoring shots of goal throughout the game. It's just North Melbourne could not convert any of them into a goal. So perhaps it goes to show North Melbourne crumbled under the pressure, as opposed to Collingwood being an exceptional team on the night. Not to discount or not acknowledge Collingwood's win, because they totally deserve it.
And it was at Marvel Stadium.
Exactly.
That's a big ground, big empty ground. 2,254 people.
Brisbane and Adelaide. So this looks like it was quite a close match. I didn't watch this one. I know that Phillips was absolutely phenomenal again and kicked about 148 goals or something ridiculous because she is a superstar.
I spent the first quarter screaming at the television because Brisbane didn't score. Adelaide kicked 2.5 goals. If Adelaide had kicked straight, they would have put Brisbane away. They were lucky that it sort of was Brisbane would get close to them, and then at the end of every quarter – they kick a goal, just to stay ahead. But, I mean, look, it was sort of Erin Phillips and daylight. And Chelsea Randall, her toughness is, like, having them both back in the team this year has made such a difference. I was a bit worried about them last week after they played Fremantle, but they've renewed my faith.
I love Chelsea.
So if you look at, as amazing as Chelsea is and a number of players on Adelaide are, do you think that really Phillips won the game for them?
Of course, but she always does. She always does. Yeah, they're a different team without it. When she was injured, they're a different team. If she's not doing it herself, she knows how to rally them to do what they need to do.
Exactly. So she's not only a great player, she's also an excellent leader, but that could be a downfall for Adelaide. But moving right along, Western Bulldogs and Melbourne. Bulldogs did it. Congratulations.
Doggies. They've had 3 wins from their 4 games. That's pretty good.
They have. And Melbourne were quite good. They just weren't really able to score or to convert what they were doing onto the scoreboard.
2.12 goals.
I know. Exactly.
Where was it? And it was at Whitnoval. It's not as if it was at Casey with that horrible game.
You know what's great? Either, so one of the best players in that game, Ellie Blackburn, there's those girls like Ellie Blackburn, Darcy Versio, Bree Davey, who kind of played out their skin season one of the AFLW, and then I feel like they dropped away a little bit, and now there seems to be this resurgence from some of those players, and it's really good to see. And Karen Paxman, my goodness, 27 lazy possessions again, 27 possessions, one mullet.
I tell you who else is...
And what a...
Izzy Huntington, I've been a fan since the word go because she's a real footballer as well. But she played back last year and they've put her forward again, which is where she initially played. And she's kicking goals and is a real presence in their forward line as well.
Nah, she's great.
It's proving to be a very smart move by the Bulldogs to put her back in the forward.
Nathan Burks is their coach and, you know, he's a pretty experienced guy, isn't he?
Mm, he is. Absolutely.
He is. GWS and West Coast. GWS in for the win, 48-28. Good game.
Yeah. Look, I reckon these two teams are sort of, I sort of put them in the same category. They're sort of not quite there, but they're thereabouts. But Cora Staunton, 4 goals. She played amazingly.
Yes, she did. Amazing. And that's a great achievement.
Huge. I mean, 4 goals, if you know how to play football and if you've grown up with football, is one thing, like Erin Phillips.
Mm.
But to be someone who's new to the game, she's been exceptional for them.
Although, can I say, like, shout out to the commentators of AFLW, you do not need to start every sentence with the Irish woman, Cora Staunton. We get it. She's Irish.
Yeah, we're onto it, yeah.
Yeah, we tweet. There just seems to be this obsession in commentary that anyone who's Irish, they have to say the Irish woman such and such. Can we just let them all be footballers?
Thank you, Beck. And that was the round that was, and now we can look forward to the round that is, round 5, the Indigenous round. Next, we will play the interview with Danielle Ponta, the Adelaide Ford. And after that, you'll also hear from Tanya Hosh, one from the archives, our interview with her in April 2020. You're listening to Chicks Talking Footy on Joy 94.9. Danielle Ponta made her debut in round 2 of the 2019 season. As a forward for the Adelaide Football Club, she received an AFL Rising Star nomination in round 4, the same year they won a premiership. Welcome, Danielle, to Chicks Talking Footy.
Thanks, Rachel.
How are you?
I'm really well, thank you.
It's a pretty exciting week for the AFLW, and this round is going to be the Indigenous round.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, with this round, how important it is for you as an Indigenous woman to have this experience?
It's really important for me. I think it's a fantastic idea that the AFLW have now included this round in our fixtures, and I think it's a good round for my teammates as well as the AFLW community to learn and embrace Indigenous culture. It's more of a game of footy from my perspective. I think it's awesome that I now get to celebrate being an Indigenous person and playing the game that I love as well. So I'm really happy and really honoured to be able to play this round this week.
And you also had the opportunity to co-design the jersey with the Aboriginal visual artist Elizabeth Close. What was your objective and inspiration in developing that design with her?
It was mostly Elizabeth Close's design. She'd done an amazing job, and I'll give credit she deserves, but she came up with the idea, and she sort of came back to me and asked me my thoughts about it, and I thought it was a great idea. It's designed or inspired by the story of the Seven Sisters, Dreamtime story, and it's a story about the resilience of women and those sisters to stay together during some issues that were happening around them, but to be resilient and strong and united and stay together. I thought it was really fitting for our team. But yeah, I was really honoured to work alongside Elizabeth Close with this design, and I'm really happy with how it's come out.
How did that all come about, Danielle? Did you know Elizabeth?
No, I don't know Elizabeth personally. I think the club reached out to her and asked her if she was interested in designing it, and she obviously was. And then through the club, I was connected to her, and then I had a chat with her about the design, and from there, it went from there.
It's great. It sounds like, if you're happy with it, it sounds like someone that you two did have a connection, and that you're sort of, she interpreted what you thought and did it well.
Yeah, she definitely did.
That's excellent. I believe you're actually in the Northern Territory at the moment. Is that right?
That's correct. I do live up here, and I travel on weekends to play footy. So I've got the best of two worlds. I get down in Adelaide in time for our final preparation, and if we're playing away, I'm flying with the girls. So as disconnected as it seems, I feel very a part of the team. That's all.
So who do you train with up there? Like who else is up in the NT with you?
It's just me at the moment. So I do my recovery by myself. and then I train with my local NTFL girls, the St. Mary's Football Club, who are just starting their finals in, up here at the moment. So I'm training with them on a Tuesday night and getting a good session in with them. And then Wednesdays I've got a PT that the club will get for me to smash with. And then I'm back at the club on Friday nights to train with the girls.
Danielle, that is highly impressive. You must be exhausted. It must be awesome for the St. Mary's Football Club to be able to train with an AFLW player as well.
Yeah, well, that's I've grown up playing St. Mary's football and the club, so it's my way of giving back to them and giving back to those younger girls that have coming that have aspirations to play AFLW. But yeah, I enjoy coming back and training with them. Like that, they're all family to me. So I feel really comfortable and really welcomed every time I do come back. So that's good.
And you show a pathway, don't you? You know, for them, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's correct.
And it's inspirational and that's empowering. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
The power of AFL.
Yeah.
We are currently chatting to Danielle Ponta from the Adelaide Crows.
Danielle, I read that there's going to be ground signage at the AFLW matches and includes a representation of the Aboriginal women's art symbol on the outside of the centre circle and features the names of the traditional owners of the land on which the match is played. Is that an important thing to know that that's on the ground for you and that's all there when you run out?
I wasn't aware of that being on the ground at all, but I guess, it's something really special to me and not only me but Indigenous culture and getting that exposure and putting that on the TV for everyone to see. I think it's great exposure and I'm really keen to run out there and be amongst all those names and hopefully I can represent myself and my culture and do them proud, I guess.
I'm sure that you will.
And some of the other women who play AFL have spoken about the importance of this round to create the conversation and to reignite the conversation within the community.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like I said, footy brings great exposure and with that it starts conversations. Sometimes those conversations are quite hard to start. This round, like it does in the men's AFL program, it does start those conversations. So I'm really looking forward to getting out there and getting amongst my teammates and teaching them and I guess guiding them through this week and hopefully they get something other than just a win out of a footy game this week. So yeah.
Although that would obviously be great, no doubt, for the Adelaide Football Club.
Yeah.
Chelsea Randall is the captain on her own this year. Do you reckon that has made a difference to the team?
No way. I mean, Chelsea has been a incredible leader for the past couple of seasons now. And she's doing it perfectly on her own now that Erin has stepped down. Erin will continue to be the leader that she is and she continues to have a voice in the club and a lot of all of us girls respect her and her voice and her decision to step down. Chelsea is an amazing leader and a mentor for all of us and I think she's doing an amazing job at it alone, although she's got Ange Foley Eloise Jones and Sarah Allen behind her in the leadership group. I think that's amazing support that she has behind her and can lean up upon.
Awesome. Hey, so speaking of Erin Phillips, you know, she's been an extraordinary player since the start of the league. So she just pops up and kicks a lazy 4 goals on the weekend. Do you ever find yourself when you're on the ground just kind of stopping and watching the Erin show?
Yeah, 100%. I think all the girls that are out on the field stop and watch it every time the ball goes deep into the forward line and Erin Phillips is there, you know something exciting is going to happen. But, yeah, she's, like I said about Chelsea, been a great mentor for me. That's really look up to on the field. I'm very proud to have her play alongside me.
Wonderful. All right, and just before we go, Danielle, 2020, bizarre year for everybody around the world and Australia. Did you end up with a new hobby or learning, or did you do anything new during this period of time?
I did not.
Me neither.
I didn't either, no.
I'm in Darwin, so it didn't affect me as much as you guys probably down south. I don't know where you're calling from right now, but we had a bit more freedom up here. So I guess we were in lockdown for about a week, and then that was it. We were out doing normal stuff and all that. So I stuck to doing my normal routine, which is working, training for footy and playing games. So there's nothing new that I learnt, unfortunately, over that time.
I'm really pleased that you weren't, that someone didn't get, we're in Melbourne, so someone didn't get the strong lockdown. So good on you.
Yeah,
Danielle, thank you very much for joining us. I hope you beat St Kilda in the inaugural Indigenous round this weekend. As I said, thanks so much for joining us on Chicks Talking Footy.
We are delighted to welcome the General Manager of Inclusion and Social Policy at the AFL, Tanya Hosh. Hi there, Tanya.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Ah, it's a great pleasure. We've been wanting to chat to you for quite some time now, so pleased you could make it. Now, that is a fascinating title, the General Manager of Inclusion and Social Policy. Can you just explain or expand a little bit on what it actually means?
How long do we have? look, it's a really great role, and it is necessarily broad. So the main areas that myself and my team work on, and, you know, with people right across the business, is obviously on issues of inclusion and, you know, dealing with anything from racism and sexism, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander issues, multiculturalism in relation to participation in our game, gender, sexuality, and, you know, transgender, non-binary issues as well, increasingly disability and communities, I guess, who may have found themselves or feel like they're on the fringe of our game. So my job is to really, it's not a football operational role, but it's a role that gives me an opportunity to work with the clubs and the whole industry, including within the AFL, about how we make the game more accessible for people and to make sure that everyone feels welcome when they come to the footy.
Now, Tanya, in 10 words or less, how do you do that? How do you make everyone feel welcome?
In 10 words or less, very funny. Well, obviously, it's a pretty complex ecosystem that we operate in. And, you know, it's been around for a long time as well, so it's got certain traditions in place. So things like Pride Game, obviously the Sir Doug Nicholls Round, which has been around for a long time now. There's a whole range of activations and focus points across the fixture, across the year, where we do, I guess, try to connect with particular community groups, make sure that we put a bit of focus and attention on the issues that they want us to understand and try and celebrate their participation in our game. That is obviously the most basic way, but there's a lot of policy work and consultation and conversations happening behind the actual game of football all of the time.
I got dizzy listening to the list of things that are in your broad and far-reaching role. What sector do you find, let's just say, this week the most challenging?
Most challenging. Gee, it would be hard to say because, you know, everything's sort of complex in its own way. But I guess, you know, when you look at the idea of inclusion and diversity, I mean, certainly it's not really that hard to get a lot of people from different backgrounds to come to the football. But how do we work to ensure that people actually feel included by ensuring that their voices and participation is represented right across the code? And that really requires a lot of cultural change, and that takes time to do it in a way that means it's sustainable and not just, you know, a one-hit wonder comes for a week or a season and then we've moved on to something else. It takes real time. So I guess I would say it doesn't matter which issue you're looking at, how we embed it through our system, how we respond more quickly and consistently to the different issues that come our way in relation to the sort of broadening of inclusion through our game is in itself really complex, and that is a real challenge, but it's one that I feel really lucky to have.
So inclusion and diversity is, well, I hope, quite important for a number of organisations. How did you come to be at the AFL?
Well, before I was at the AFL, I was the joint campaign director for an organisation called Recognise with Tim Gartrell, and we were running a national campaign to prepare the country for a referendum to recognise First Australians in our constitution and take the racially discriminatory part out of the constitution. We had a partnership with the AFL, cricket and the NRL, and we're increasing our reach into other sports. That was a really successful partnership, and I got a whole new appreciation for the reach of football and how many people you could talk to about issues that they may not pick up in the rest of their lives. So the AFL became a really compelling vehicle once I saw the power of the game. And it's a game I grew up with, living in South Australia, so always had loved the game. And I was fortunate to have a conversation with Gillon McLaughlin, who knew he had AFLW coming, and I had some experience working in women's services and women's policy as well in South Australia, and we got talking, and over a period of time he approached me about a role. So I guess in some ways you could say I was in the right place at the right time, but also, you know, the opportunity to work across issues that I feel really passionate about, women's issues and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander issues and social justice in general. It was a hard decision to leave the Recognised campaign, but it was the right one for me at the time, and, you know, football is a platform like very few others.
I guess, Tanya, in your job there's a lot of really hard parts, but there's obviously, I suppose, some really enjoyable parts too. What's been the number one moment for you in your role since you've been at the AFL?
Oh, do I only get to pick one?
As many as you like.
Three.
Okay, three.
That's in 50 words or less.
Okay, so I guess one of the first ones would be the appointment of Peter Matera, to the AFL Tribunal. He starts this season. He's the first Aboriginal person to be appointed to the AFL Tribunal. I see that as a really sensational and important step, you know, to have, you know, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in decision-making. I think when I started, of 18 clubs, there was only one Aboriginal person on a club board, and that was Gold Coast Suns, Samantha Riley, so a woman as well, so that was great. There's now five Indigenous people on club boards across the league, and I know that will continue to grow. I think that's really important, having diversity in decision making is as important as seeing it on the field, and that's when you move from just diversity to actual inclusion, you know, which is why I guess my appointment to the AFL executive was quite a big deal. I don't think I appreciated it at the time, but it was. And probably the final one would be the unveiling of the Nikki Winmar statue at Optus Oval last year, the first Aboriginal AFL player statue, and the fact that it was more than just an embodiment of Nikki Winmar, but it stood for this, you know, what he was standing for at the time, which was to say no to racism. So that was incredibly symbolic, and a wonderful celebration. And I don't think I'll ever forget seeing the community come together both Indigenous and non-Indigenous to celebrate that moment in such a positive way. I don't think we'll ever forget that.
It's hard to believe that it was such a long time ago that Nikki Wimmer did that. And there's until the statue, it sort of had gone away a bit weirdly, you know, him in the folklore. But then the statue's unveiled, as you said, and it's brought it right back to the surface. And I think it's been really celebrated what he did and applauded all over again, which is great.
It is. And, you know, with every anniversary, we tend to do those things in 5-year blocks, don't we?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we'll remember. And, you know, I've been back to Optus since then, and I've seen people with their families having photos taken and hearing children who don't know who Nikki Wimmer is ask about that moment, and, you know, hear people talking about that. And, you know, it's really easy to jump past the importance of and the significance of symbolism, a bit like, you know, the what will always be now an iconic image that Michael Wilson took of Taylor Harris with that with that kick. You know, she's out there doing her job, and somehow it becomes an iconic moment because it's a woman. And then she's obviously vilified and, you know, receives all this misogynistic behaviour as a result of her just, you know, showing her excellence and athleticness. And, you know, these things matter because they do represent a time where we started to have a new conversation, and that's always important.
The you mentioned Taylor Harris. The way she's held herself through all these challenges, say, particularly the one you just mentioned, has been extraordinary. For a young woman to be able to, she was on, I think it was SEN today or yesterday, and sat there for half an hour and was eloquent and was patient and was calm and so young. And well, she's a great role model, really, isn't she?
Yeah, look, she is. And I guess I would say that, you know, what's really special about listening to our AFLW players speak about their experience in the game and what's happening in their lives is that they're sort of standing on the shoulders of giants, of all of those women in football that have come before them, who carved out a way and ensured that we're at this moment. What I love is seeing that continuum and that growth. And I just think, you know, young people in society are often considered to be naive or lacking in sophistication and experience. But I think time and time again, we see young people all across the country in sport and outside of it standing up, being very clear about what they think and having the opportunity to consider issues that, you know, perhaps we would have thought isn't their place to consider. So I just think, you know, of course someone like Taylor's going to emerge through something like this as quite the role model, but I always like to bring it back to all of those people whose voices perhaps we didn't hear, you know, many years ago when they were trying to say the same sorts of things. And it's just exciting to me that, you know, someone like Taylor is carrying, I think, the burden of this responsibility by virtue of the attention she's received so strongly and courageously.
Now, Tanya, obviously one of the things that's of great importance to us and our listeners is the inclusion of the LGBTIQ plus community in AFL. Can you talk to us about what the AFL is doing in that space at the moment?
Yeah, sure. Look, we have been, I think, you know, since probably 2009, I'm told, you know, really starting to engage in these issues. So, you know, in 2009, we sort of updated Rule 35, as it's known now, of our what was originally a racial and religious vilification rule to pick up all forms of vilification, including in relation to, you know, sexuality and preference and gender identity. So that's a really significant rule, and we're actually reviewing that rule again, largely because of what social media is bringing to the table in that way, to see how we can be more effective around those issues. And we're very fortunate that Roe Allen, the Gender and Sexuality Commissioner of Victoria, is sitting on that review committee with us. And Roe's been a wonderful advisor and provoker of me in terms of making sure we understand those issues well. So I'm really fortunate to have had Rose's support in these conversations. We're a member of Pride in Sport now in the last couple of years, which means that, you know, we're being accountable to that network in terms of putting in a submission every year to talk about what we are doing and what we still plan to do. Obviously, the Pride game between St Kilda and Sydney is going from strength to strength, and we're seeing that obviously in the women's game as well, and we know that that's going to continue to grow, and it's a really, really important part of our fixture. And obviously I'm always ready to talk with all of you. Yeah, we're going to continue to, you know, do work in terms of all of those things. And as I understand it, in terms of gender diversity, we're the first contact sport in the world to have come up with a policy for the elite level of the game. And very soon we'll be releasing our policy for community football as well.
Well, Tanya Hosh, we better let you go because you've got an awful lot to do. Thank you very much
for
chatting.
Can I say thanks for your support and your leadership in all of this as well? I know that you have to work really hard to, you know, bring light to the work that you're doing and the conversations that you're helping facilitate. So I just really want to, you know, say thank you to you. Happy International Women's Day on Sunday, and look forward to seeing you at the footy.
Great. Thanks very much, Tanya.
Thanks, Tanya.
Appreciate it.
Joy 94.9 is Australia's LGBTQIA plus community radio station. To support Joy, donate, subscribe, become a member. Head to joy.org.au for more.